Ball at Boix.
Hello and welcome to Ball at Boix. I'm Akhila Rangana. Joining me as always, Jeffrey Boycott, all set to answer the questions that have come in for him. But before we get on to that, hello Jeffrey, how have you been doing?
Yeah, I've been watching England play South Africa, and I think most of us thought South Africa on paper looked a stronger team. But there's been various injuries to both sides, and England have come out on top in what was a rained-off series of 2 2020s and 5 1-dayers, unusual amounts of rain around. And England have done quite well.
All right, Jeffrey, talking about England, the first question on today's show is related to England. It's from Jeremy Firth, who's writing in from Scotland. And he says that Paul Collingwood recently became the most capped England cricketer. What do you think has been Collingwood's biggest contribution to English cricket?
Collingwood has been a credit to English cricket because he's not the best-looking player. He's not the prettiest player in terms of his play. He's not what you could call aesthetic. He doesn't use enough top hand or left hand on the bat. He's very much a bottom-handed player who works and shovels it to the onside. But he has enormous strength of character and someone you have to warm to over the years because he's not been blessed with as much talent as some players. In other words, he makes the best of what he's got. And for youngsters playing cricket, hoping that one day they'll play international cricket, he's a credit for youngsters to look up to because he's shown throughout his career that sport is not just about being blessed with talent. It's about character, it's about mental toughness, it's about hard work. And he, above anybody, gets the best out of himself and shows to everyone that you can get to the top, you can achieve if you really want it bad enough. And I'm one of those that's warmed to him over the years because I like cricketers who have got some guts and some character and they'll stand up and may not be as blessed as some. And on top of that, he's an absolutely wonderful slip fielder. He's an athletic outfielder. He's got lovely hands and he's a credit to the game and English cricket.
Well, Paul Collingwood gets your vote, Jeffrey. Now we'll move on to another series, another test series that's currently underway, and it's the Australia-West Indies test series. And the question we have is from Royd Hanmer, who's writing in from Sydney. And Royd is saying that many experts are critical of Chris Gayle's captaincy. There are suggestions of replacing him with Darren Ganga for the revival of a West Indies cricket. Now, Chris Gayle's just scored 100 in the second test against Australia, but do you think a change in captaincy is necessary for a change in the fortunes for West Indies?
Well, first of all, if the captain makes 100, he's a very good player, is Chris Gayle. That has nothing to do with his captaincy. It's just important that the captain does play a role in the team. He bowls or bats or does something rather than that does nothing. If you're going to captain a side, you have to offer something to it. And Roy telling me that Ganga might be a better captain, all I can say is he'll have to be an excellent man at leading players, and he'll have to be brilliant at tactics, because quite frankly, his batting has been below average on the times he's played for West Indies. He couldn't cut it when he played. Why should we think he can cut it now? He's always looked good for 20 minutes, but then gets out. I just looked up his record. I think he averages about 25 in Test match cricket, and sorry, that's not good enough. Changing captaincy, if you've got somebody better than Chris Gayle, fine. But just changing him for the sake of trying to get success because some of the other players aren't playing well, you've got to remember that captains are only as good as the people they have under them. And I said before that they have some very good players, the West Indies. Gayle's a good player. I mean, they have two fast bowlers, Taylor and the other guy, and that Dwayne Bravo was a wonderful cricketer. But they have some very ordinary players. So you've got to be very careful when you're blaming the captain, and I don't see anybody that could do it better at the minute.
Well, Roy, there you go with Jeffrey's views. Right, Jeffrey, moving on to another test series that's just concluded. It's the India-Sri Lanka test series, and the question is from T. Siddhartha, who's writing in from India, and he says that by beating Sri Lanka, India have become the number one test side in the world, and Siddhartha wants to know, is this ranking justified?
What you've got to be careful of is it's a guide. It's done by someone at the ICC in Dubai, and it creates a talking point. I'm not saying it's wrong or right, but it's not to be taken literally. It can only be literal, accurate, if all the test-playing nations played each other, home and away, the same number of times. And we all know that's not going to happen. The top sides want to play each other because they make more money out of that. India is a powerhouse, Australia, England, South Africa. They're going to play each other more than they do some of the lesser nations. Next 11 months, I think I read somewhere that India have only 2 test matches to come. How ridiculous is that? So how can you judge India's performance over the next 11 months? You can judge them over the past few months. They've done very well, and I've no problem with them being number one. But it can never be taken literal and accurate whether it's India, England, Australia, whoever it is, because there is just not a fair way at the moment of all the countries playing each other the same number of times. So don't get sucked in to believing whoever's the top that that's just definitely true. It's somebody's opinion. It could be him, could be me, could be anybody.
Well, Siddhartha, there you go with Jeffrey's views. Right, Jeffrey, moving on, a question from Michael, who's writing in from Wellington. And he says that the second test between New Zealand and Pakistan here was a ripper. Don't you think games like this are the ideal advertisement for test cricket? And such pitches like the ones we saw in Wellington should be prepared everywhere, is what he wants to know.
Well, absolutely. I think most people watching the game, public and ex-players, would like result pitches. When there's a bit in the pitch for the seamers, the spinners, it brings everyone into the game. Runs are precious as well, and they have to be made under pressure, rather than lots of runs on easy flat batting pitches. Because when you get these flat batting pitches, I think the games become tedious. They become tedious for spectators, for commentators. You know, there's a sameness about them. There's just a lot of runs being scored. And cricket's supposed to be a contest, a fair contest between bat and ball. These flat batting pitches are an unfair contest. And what we really need is exactly right what the questioner said. We need a variety and spice in the game so that there's a slight uncertainty or nail-bitingness from spectators and players who are on an edge, not quite sure how the game's going to go. It can ebb and flow, it can sway. And eventually, it'll come out, one of them on top, from a really good game of cricket. And you're right, it was a great game of cricket.
Boyk's question of the week.
Well, Jeffrey, it's now time to move on to the question that you've picked as the best one that's coming for you this week. It's from Bhim Kumar, who's written in from Mumbai, and it's to do with Virendra Sehwag. Bhim wants to know, do you think Virendra Sehwag is the most dangerous batsman in the game today? And Bhim is talking purely in terms of the dominating impact that Sehwag has on the opposing team and his ability to take the game away in a few hours. Would you call him a modern-day great?
Good question, Kumar. Modern day great. I know it's fun to watch him. I'm not sure it's modern day. It's old fashioned in a way. If you read the history of the game, Wally Hammond made 336 for England versus New Zealand at Auckland in the 1932 3 series. It took him to 318 minutes to get 336. So that's very much like Sehwag. And you take the great Sir Donald Bradman, the genius batsman, he 6 times scored over 300 or more, not all in tests. But in test matches alone at Headingley, Leeds, Bradman made 304 at Leeds in 1934 in 6 hours. But in 1930, 4 years before, when he was only 21, he actually made 334 in 6 hours and 20 minutes. They were good batting pitches like Sehwag bats on. Now, when they are good batting pitches, he plays like the old-fashioned great players. It's amazing. I mean, for people who grew up like myself on uncovered pitches, it would be very difficult to play like that. But he is a rare, special player. When the pitch is good, he can take the game away from the opposition because he plays with a flowing bat and an uninhibited style. He has an uncluttered mind, which I like about him. People think I'm critical. I'm not. I don't think he gets cluttered up with technique, footwork. He just plays in a wonderful, instinctive way. And that's his way of playing is good. And I think on good batting pitches, he is a modern-day great. He takes the game away from you very, very quickly, whoever bowls. If it moves around, if he was to play in New Zealand or England a bit more, then the ball moves around a bit. I don't see him getting 300 in England or New Zealand so easily. But on certain pitches, he's a fantastic cricketer, fantastic player.
All right, thanks so much for that, Jeffrey. That's a wrap on today's show. But don't forget, you can send in your questions to Jeffrey Boycott using our feedback form. And he'll be back here in a fortnight's time to answer them. Until then, it's goodbye.
Bowl at Boyd's on Crick Info Talk.